Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents Sports Talk Saturday.
What did they say? What's the saying? A blind squirrel finds a blind horse? What? It's something. There's a blind animal and he finds a piece of...
On WGR.
Make sure that the blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then.
I don't know what you're referring to, and I don't care.
Sports Radio 550.
The voice there, Nate Geary, is in London right now, right?
Europe is what we know. He's in London.
He's in the United Kingdom. I know that.
Yes, he's tweeting
about Ben and Jerry vending machines.
He was tweeting about like how London people are...
Wait, how does that work? They're day drinking
and... He said that he's thinking about introducing people from London to the folding table.
Mm. You know, I was only swept up in the Ben and Jerry vending machine.
So what if there's just an ice cream cone like stabbed
not a
into
cone.
The?
Which I love how adorable. It's like pints of ice cream.
I love how adorable it was. He's like, I'm gonna try to stay off Twitter,
and he's tweeting the net like 12 hours later, times. Joe DiBiase, Lou DiBiase, that's Derek Kramer there running the board here at Sports Talk Saturday. Chad DeNemesis of SB Nation, also the Beyond the Blade podcast. He's now on the Western Hotline. Chad, what are your thoughts on a Ben and Jerry vending machine? Does that sound like something we should be bringing here to the United States?
That's interesting. A Ben and Jerry. So it.
I guess it has to be refrigerated. I think
it has to say that. Like, that has to be like a refrigerator one, right?
Yeah, I think it would have to.
I mean, kind of like a drink vending machine, right? Same thing, just a little bit colder.
Oh, Lou's got like a. In your mind, you've got like one of those like soft serve, like serve your own soft serve machines. Like you just pull a lever and the ice cream just starts coming out.
Does that count as a vending machine?
I don't think that's what Nate's.
These are the hard hitting questions you get when you
United Kingdom right now. anyways, we're not here to talk about ice cream, although we could do that later. You never know.
Speaking of ice, right? Segway grade. There we go.
C.
Tremendous. I kind of want to kick him off the show right now. Chad DeNemesis, you can follow him on Twitter, at CM DeNemesis. And Chad, you've been doing these charts I found really helpful, I think, through the first part of the season. Just how you came about the idea to do that, where and then like why the three stats that you picked, scoring chances, expected goals for, and what's the other one I'm missing here? Shot share, 5-on-5 shot share.
Yeah. The reason I picked those is primarily I think those are kind of the most mainstream ones, if you will, and probably easiest for the most people to understand. I mean, shot share, that's pretty simple. Scoring chances, same thing. You kind of get an idea of who has the better scoring chances. And then expected goals are kind of your quality. So while you could be leading in shot share, which the Sabres, you know, for example, were last night, 5-on-5, they were overall, they led the game in shot share. It was pretty close, 50-50, something like that. But Florida had the higher expected goal ratings, which means they probably... or they did get the better quality scoring chances. So it's just something that, you know, when I went to the RIT Analytics Conference, you know, the people I talked to there, people who did that for other teams, so I kind of picked up on that. I wanted to kind of put out a chart out there that easy for people to understand, easy for people to read for the game, so kind of for each period, and then a final one. And then also I added in that player shot chart. So that kind of stemmed from maybe the first or second game of the season. I can't remember. You know, where a player, I forgot who it was specifically, had like a really good first period, but kind of struggled the next two periods. But overall, look at their shot share throughout the game, it looked fine, but really, I wonder how the track players did through each period. So kind of it's a way to, a measuring stick, where if a player has a really good shot share, it could kind of make their numbers look good the rest of the game. But if you kind of follow period by period, maybe they had one good period, but they struggled for two, and I kind of wanted to pull that out with that chart.
Right.
So through pretty much it seems like everyone kind of is in agreement that the first couple games the Sabres just ran over their opponent and it's been a little bit different since. So on the overall, do you think it's been a big change like possession-wise, scoring chances, goals for, and how they've looked since the first couple of games?
No, I mean, they're still there. I mean, Columbus was a rough night throughout. There's no denying that. So that was maybe their worst overall game performance. The Montreal game, I think, was pretty even. You know, it's back and forth. Sabres had some good moments, and Montreal had some good moments. And then the Florida game, I think, was kind of the same thing. You know, the first 10 minutes of the first period was all Florida, and the Sabres got back. You know, the Sabres had a better second period. And then the third period, they kind of, you know, they kind of got steamrolled that whole period. So overall, it equates out to a pretty even game. But, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, when your numbers are that good in those first two games, you know, these charts, I got posted one today from Sean Tierney, the numbers are kind of, you know, they're kind of coming back a little bit, but that's to be expected. You're not going to dominate every team like you did New Jersey and Pittsburgh. The thing you have to watch and be careful of is this is now, I think, the third game, the game yesterday, that they've kind of been pretty significantly beat out in the expected goals measurement.
Mm-hmm.
So something to keep an eye on, where is one of the things I was concerned about last year was their shot quality. Well, they could be getting all the chances they want, but if you're not getting quality scoring chances, most times they're not going to go in the net. And then, you know, with how well their power play is doing, it's kind of covering up those chances, but the power play is always not going to click at 60%. So it's just some things to keep an eye on. Is there any reason for caution or concern at this moment? I don't think so, because they're still playing well in other areas, and overall their game looks to be improved. But it's only five games, and we'll see how long that can continue, and hopefully it continues throughout the whole season or most of the season.
Yeah, going 4-0-1, your first five games, pretty great start for the Sabres so far, one of their best starts in a long time. But we were kind of looking into what the struggles of this team are. And outside of course, Sobotka playing still on the top six, we were kind of pinpointing situational coaching, you know, late in the third period yesterday, not being able to get the puck out of your own zone with Ristolainen out there and Jake McCabe. And they've really, it seems like they've been kind of taking their foot off the gas. And in the third period, with these two-goal leads, they've been blowing them. Has that been the biggest struggle with the Sabres team so far to start the year? Is it situational coaching down the stretch?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, that I can say it can be expected. You know, this is, after all, a new coach who really hasn't coached in the NHL for a couple of years. So maybe he's trying some things with a new team to see how it works. So these last two games, it really hasn't worked, I guess you could say. I mean, they blew two-goal leads in both games. So, you know, it is what it is kind of thing. You know, you can raise question marks, like, why is Dahlin sitting for 8 minutes? I know he didn't play good against Montreal, and he was okay, I guess you could say, against Florida, but it's an interesting decision. And then what you're going to do there, you're going to shorten your bench. You're going to take one of your better defensemen off the ice, and then you're going to kind of roll through four guys pretty much the whole last eight-ish minutes of the third period. And then you guys are going to be kind of winded, like it looked like, at the end, instead of just kind of rolling through and keeping your team going and keeping on the attack. When you were doing a good job and you scored a goal early in the third period against Florida, you can kind of just keep pushing. And, you know, it's interesting to see how it kind of plays out. Like, you know, like my bigger issue over Dahlin, I think, was maybe promoting a guy like Jimmy Vesey, who we know has defensive struggles, promoting him to the Eichel line when he really hasn't played well at all.
Yeah.
And then I think with around like five minutes left, we almost gave up a goal to tie the game because of a key made, because he didn't pick up Ekblad coming off the blue line.
Right.
He never even looked. So, I mean, you know, there's, again, it's a new coach trying to fill out his players, figure it out. So, you know, it's fine at this point, and I expect that. It's when we get into early, mid-November that you kind of want to see these things clean up and change and kind of go back to how they should be.
I was visibly mad when I saw that play, and it almost ended up in the back of their neck, because when they show the replay, VC is just staring at the puck, and Ekblad just goes right up the chute, and he's got a wide-open opportunity. So, yeah, I remember that play.
And isn't that why Olsen was kind of taken off that line? So
I don't know. That leads me right into where I wanted to bring this up with you next. Chad, the deployment of some of these young players, I know you mentioned Dahlin, Mittelstadt's averaging under 10 minutes a night right now. I saw you and Craig Reve going back and forth a little bit about this on Twitter, that I agreed with a lot of it. And also Joki Haru is, like, I thought he's been great. He's averaging under 18 minutes a night. Olofsson doesn't play a lot down the stretch last night. Overall, the Sabres, Kruger right now, and his deployment of the young players, Mittelstadt maybe in particular, like, what are your thoughts on how they're being used?
Sorry, with Mittelstadt, I guess it's, you know, he's been an interesting case, I guess you could say. Now, he had a really good game against Pittsburgh. New Jersey game, he was fine. I think the Columbus and Montreal games, he struggled. But the interesting part is the second period of the Florida game, I think that line had probably their best period since the Pittsburgh game. And now Rodriguez is there instead of Sherry now. But
mm-hmm.
They had a really good second period, and then they basically played one shift in the third period. So I don't know. I mean, it's weird to me because Rodriguez is known as a defensive forward throughout his career. He's good at that. they sat Middlestad, they sat Olsen, who has had struggles at 5-on-5, but again, it gets back to when Vesey gets promoted, when he, arguably with Middlestad, is the worst defensive forward of that group. I guess that's the interesting part. Like, maybe if you want to hold the lead and you want to do that, I would put Rodriguez there, but Rodriguez just, for some reason, appears to be in the doghouse of Kruger, so that kind of is what it is. But, you know, that's, you know, Middlestad, I'm not really surprised. I think he should get some more playing time as we go here. I think, again, he's trying to ease him in. Yoki Haru's been really good. I don't have any problem with the usage there, really. You know, he's played a lot. He's been very good. He's done good things with Scandella. So Yoki Haru's fine. It's just, you know, the Dahlin playing the least at 5-on-5 among defensemen, I think, is my biggest issue with the young players. And we'll kind of see if that continues here. But that's I guess, where my yellow warning flag is up right now, is with that usage.
Linus Allmark, I thought, was really good yesterday, Chad. Going to the goaltending here, I think he's had two strong performances. I think Carter Hutton's been really solid this year, too. How do you think this, I mean, the rotation, Hutton has played more than Allmark to start off the year. Is that how you think this is going to go? Is it more so going to be based on performance, just who has the hot hand? Because I really like the performance of both so far. How do you think goaltending is going to play on as the season goes on?
Yeah, I think that's the right approach that he has right now. It's kind of, like you said, riding the hot hand. And then kind of whoever takes over, who's playing the best, kind of gets more games. So they both played well to this point. So there's nothing to complain about there. It's just, it's really with both of them, it's kind of the same thing as last year. It's finding that consistency. They both had good stretches as part of last season and then just fell way off a cliff. So you kind of, and that's been Allmark's thing through his whole career, even in Rochester, is just getting that consistency in your play. He'll have a stretch of 3-4 really good games.
Right.
And then you'll get 7 really bad ones. So he's got to find that consistency. And so far, so good. He's played really good in both games. You know, he got them a point against Columbus. He played very well against against Florida. So, you know, so hopefully that continues, because I think that's the biggest thing here with all of this. Because they can afford to come back in their numbers as long as the goaltending kind of stays at this level. If the goaltending is going to come back too with their numbers, that's kind of going to where you're going to run into the problems, because the goaltending can kind of cover up some deficiencies. But if both come back, and if the goaltending comes back a lot, then I think we're going to try to get in trouble, kind of what we saw last season.
Chad DeDominicis is on the West Her Hotline from Die by the Blade and the Beyond the Blade podcast. It's really the third line. Everyone, I think, kind of last night wanted to nickname it. We're calling it the log line right now, with Larson, Girgensons, and Okposo, which I like. I think it's funny. I think it's good. So far this year, they've maybe been their best line possession-wise, and I'm wondering how much you're surprised by that. Because last year it seemed like they were okay in that area, but this year they've been, I mean, is it too much to say they've been dominant possession-wise this season?
Oh, they have been, unquestionably. They have been their best consistent line in dominated possession. When that line is on the ice, they're always in the offensive zone. It's crazy. Like, I had a tweet yesterday before they started scoring, is, they create chance to dominate possession, but the hockey guys decided they couldn't score goals. But, they, you know, they got their goal yesterday. Actually, they got 2 goals, really, when they were on the ice. So
they should have had 3 if Larson doesn't miss
wide
that
open that, like, 20 seconds after his first goal,
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, and that's good to see that coming. I mean, that's kind of when it gets into the depth scoring, right? That's what they need. If you're going to get that from that line, that's good. I mean, I'm not totally surprised by it. I mean, last season that line together was pretty good. The difference is this year they're not getting 85 to 90% defensive zone starts. They're in the range of like 35 to 40. So they're getting more offensive opportunities. They're not, you know, with Housley being just crushed with just huge defensive minutes responsibility. So I think we're seeing that slight change. While they're still getting defensive minutes, they're not getting as many. And it's helping, it's contributing, it's allowing them to be more offensive, to control the puck more and to do things offensively, which is good. So, You know, a lot of people go after Larson and Girgensons and even Okposo, and I was one of the people too. So, you know, I guess we all owe them apologies so far, but if they can keep it going, that's great. You know, Okposo looks pretty good, and he fits that role. You know, even though he makes $6 million, he fits that role. That's the player he is now. Larson is always, last season and then now this season, has been a good player for them, just doesn't score a lot. And same thing with Girgensons. He does his thing. He fulfills his role, so it's frustrating. The goals don't always come. The scoring's not there, but you can't say they don't do their jobs well.
Right. We got a question, I think, in the first hour about Okposo going up to where Sobotka's playing right now. That's not an idea I liked. I didn't want to split up that line at all right now. But I think the question is kind of a overall sentiment of the fan base right now that everyone seems to pile on Sobotka every time he does something wrong in a game. And I'm definitely, like, I'm right at the front of the camp. Like, I don't understand why he's on that line. Maybe there's something that you're seeing in him that Kruger might be seeing that I don't. But I don't like him on that line at all. And I'm wondering if you can foresee an end to this coming. Like, is he, first off, as bad as kind of social media would make you think, or is it just the kind of a pile-on situation? And if you didn't want him on that line, like, do you have an idea of somebody you think would fit well with Skinner and Johansson?
Yeah, I'll say this about Sobotka. Last year, we've said numerous times, he was very bad, one of the worst forwards in the league. He's played better than that. Now, is that a high bar to clear? Not really. So he's had moments where he's made good plays. We saw, I think it was a pass to Skinner he made yesterday. That was a really nice play. It was a good job. He's done some nice things defensively. But there's still a handful of times in a game, it's the what are you doing moments. He kind of just looks, you know, he makes that mistake, that bad pass. Early in the game, he had a situation where there was a pass up the wall, an easy breakout, and he kind of, for some reason, went back into the corner and almost lost it. So you know, there's things like that that are going to be in his game. So I think the coach appears to like him. He likes the things that he does. You know, I don't think he fits with Skinner and Johansson, to be quite honest. But at the same time, I'm not touching that Larson line at all. I'm not for any reason right. Am I touching that until they start to cool down a little bit, maybe. What I would do, which I'm sure this coach is not going to do if something drastically crazy happens, I would keep Rodriguez with Mittelstadt. And then when Sherry is back, I put him with Mittelstadt. So you have Rodriguez, Mittelstadt, and Sherry, who was a very good line for them. They played together last year. And then I would put Jimmy Vesey up there to see if he can get some scoring out of Vesey. And then try that. Try to get him
like
going
that
way. And then that takes the bulk out of the lineup, which I don't think is going to happen, like I said, unless something happens here in the next few weeks where he's really bad and a coach then could take him out. But that's what I would do if it was up to me, but I kind of just don't see this coach doing that.
That definitely is the point. Yeah, that definitely is the fan sentiment too. Right now, at the game yesterday, there was a quick outlet pass in the defensive zone, and Sobotka had a one-on-one, and the crowd kind of got a little excited, only to instantly realize who it was, and the crowd kind of died down really quickly after that. He doesn't really, it seems, I think chemistry, I don't know, Chad, if you would agree, the chemistry between, you know, Skinner, Johansson right now I think is strong. You know, of course, Eichel and Reinhardt on the power play. You know, Dahlin and Olsson played together in Sweden. Those two have looked really strong together on the power play. Has chemistry on the offense been something that has been a strong suit for the Sabres so far? I don't know. I've kind of noticed that there's a lot of pairings here, including that log line, that just really gel.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, we know Reinhardt and Eichel play well together, right? And,
right.
You know, they got 5 or 6 games with Olsson last year as a line, and that did really well. So they brought that back together. You know, Johansson and Skinner have never played together, but it looks like they have something there, so that's fine. And then it's kind of by the same thing. I go back to putting that Sherry, Rodriguez, Mittelstadt line back together when Sherry is healthy, because that was last season. And then we know that fourth line or third line or whatever line you want to call them, the good line, I guess you could say, you know, they worked last year. They're working now, so... Really, well, yes, you're kind of repeating lines that worked last year. If you have a different coach, a different system, a different deployment, so you're taking what succeeded last year and kind of putting that in a new system, and so far, you know, it's worked with other lines, so I would kind of be interested to kind of give that a run when Sherry gets healthy, which it could be a couple weeks still, but we'll see how that plays out.
Last one, Chad. Ristolainen, I mean, he's right back at the top of the team in minutes played. I was curious if he wasn't going to be traded to see what he'd look like on a second or third pair this season, and so far it has not happened. And I guess if Montour comes back, he could maybe play a role in maybe limiting Ristolainen's minutes. But is there somebody on the team right now that you think, like, is there an argument to be made that Ristolainen should be playing around 20 to 21 minutes, or do you think with Montour out that it's right to be playing him as much as they're playing him?
No, I mean, I'm always going to say that, you know, I think he needs his minutes pulled back. You know, for as hard as I've done him, I will say he's been good so far this year. He was excellent in the first two games. I think he's kind of come back a little bit here the last few games. He's kind of having more, I guess you could say, Risto moments where you're like, gee, man, what are you doing? Like, even that goal against Montreal, like, the penalty kill goal. Like, why are you trying to go up? I know his stick got hit, but why are you going up the middle? Like, why are you trying that? You know, it's, so there's still some of those things in his game, but overall, I guess there's been less of them. But again, we're at a five-game stretch here. Now, if you start putting that out at 10, 20 games, and you're taking the play in 25 minutes, well, history shows throughout his career that that's going to start to come back more and more, and you're kind of seeing a little bit of it. But, you know, he's playing good right now. The team is winning games, so I don't think that's going to change, especially if you're going to play Dahlin the way you're playing him right now. I don't know. I guess I don't want Scandella really playing 20-something minutes either, even though he's playing well with Joakim Haro. So it's you know, the way the defense minutes are being distributed, I guess that's going to kind of how it goes for now. It's just, like I said, I guess in the beginning of the conversation, if Dahlin's going to play that little and Ristolainen's going to play that much, I have concerns over the long haul if that's going to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Chad, thanks for joining us today, man. I think you're doing a great job with all the social media stuff. We actually even have callers that are referencing it, your stuff a lot. So keep up the good work, man, and we look forward to the next chat.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Anytime.
Thanks. There's Chad DeDominicis on the West Her Hotline. You can follow him on Twitter at CM. I'm going to spell it out here because, you know, we experienced this. Italian last names.
Right.
It can be tough to spell. DeDominicis. Follow him on Twitter. A lot of good stuff during Sabre game days that I like to follow. The charts are nice. Expected goals for. I always like to have that because, you know, sometimes you got to go looking for it. Like, not everybody just knows how to go look for advanced stats like that.
It's not as easy to, like, compared to football. You always got Pro Football Focus, where hockey, sometimes you got to look a little deeper.
Hockey, there are sites, but they're not necessarily the most user-friendly sites, if you know what I mean. Like, they kind of feel like they were designed in 2003.
Yeah.
So,
just a bunch of numbers and data.
Yeah, you got to know where to go, and then you've got to know how to operate the site. But I think there's a lot of good.
Making it user-friendly is key.
Well, you know what else really happens, too? A lot of these guys that are designing these websites and are kind of like in on the numbers like that, their sites don't last almost long enough to be able to kind of improve like in a user-friendly way like that because teams are hiring these guys. Like teams are – the Leafs hired the guy from Advanced Hockey Stats. There was one website, like one of the first ones, that the Leafs hired a guy, Vegas hired a guy. They've hired the general manager guy, the Vegas Golden Knights did.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So a lot of these guys are getting picked up on by different teams. So sometimes you got to go looking. But I think Chad does a good job of putting that stuff out there in social media. All right, some reaction to what Chad DeDominicis just had to say on the Sabres. We're kind of doing a lot of hockey here. I do want to get into football again as we progress, though. Sports Talk Saturday, Joe DiBiase, Lou DiBiase, and Derek Kramer here on WGR.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We obviously know we have some very talented players in our organization that don't have playoff experience. So the fact that we can go out, we're looking to add players to our skill level to help out how we want to play the game. But to bring in a player like Marcus Johansson, who was in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals last year, I think he's been in playoffs 8 of his 9 years in the National Hockey League. That's experience that's going to help our team out a lot. Colin Miller, you know, 2 years ago playing in the Stanley Cup Finals in Vegas there.
Sabres general manager Jason Botterill. We're going to play that back for you in the next hour. Some good stuff with him.
Johansson, he was talking about, who's been really good.
Yeah, not Jonas Johansson, who you have the weird infatuation with, but...
Big goalie. Yeah. Big Swede.
Big goalie. He plays in Cincinnati.
Calm down there, Tim.
Yeah. Lou just likes anyone Tim Murray drafted.
Hey, there's a lot of them that are playing well, including Okposo lately.
There's a lot you've never heard. There's a lot of them you've never
yeah,
heard.
Yeah, there's a lot winning Conn Smythe's on other teams, too, so...
Yeah, it was a bad trade. It's bad.
Meanwhile, Sobotka's on the top six. Yeah. You know who we could really use right now?
Well, all they right. did. They did get Montour too.
Not in that trade.
And yeah, the pick they got, they used to get Montour.
I mean, you would have got.
That
him
makes
anyway.
It a lot better. I you mean, it's still not anyway. A win, but
it's still part of the trade tree.
Well, you could have got him anyway, but you would have had to trade the pick that was Dylan Cousins instead of the later round pick. Oh no, that's not true. They had another first. They had the Sharks first.
Yeah. That's right.
So maybe that could
because
been. So,
they traded away another. General GM but, TM guy. That's
well, he wasn't
going to
sign.
Forward.
He wasn't going to sign here. That's different.
He wasn't going to sign here.
Yeah. O'Reilly's different. He was under contract, but. Yeah, we're talking some Sabres here. 803-0550 is the phone number. Joe DiBiase, Lou DiBiase here on WGR for about another, you know, hour and a half or so. And is it right to say that pretty much everybody's more confident in the Bills right now than the Sabres?
It sounds like it from the past hour.
You think that's right?
Yeah. People are walking on thin ice with the Sabres still. You can tell everybody wants to buy in and they want to be excited about this start.
Or hesitant because of last season.
It's that and also the shaky last two games. I think they're starting to almost get, you know, recurring like flashbacks of that 10-game streak and then the collapse. Right. Because you knew it was like, this thing's teeter-tottering. Like, is this sustainable? And it wasn't. I'm not willing to go that far about it this year. Again, I think there are a lot more positives in this run than there was last year that are sustainable. I think a lot of it is situational. A lot of it is coaching. And I think you'll get better, too. When I like what you said, too, when we were talking to Chad. When Montour comes back, I think that will hopefully reduce Ristolainen's minutes.
If he's not even traded by that point.
So get Sheary back.
That's the
other
thing.
Maybe they take Sobotka out of the lineup. I doubt it. But
we have kind of stopped talking about a Ristolainen trade because the season has started and we spent so much time of the summer doing it. I still think he gets traded. Like, if I had to put money on it, if I had to guess, I still think he gets traded. There are too many bodies here. It's the same. The issue still remains the same. And I think they've been able to put it off because of the injuries. But at some point, Montour's going to get healthy. Pilot's going to get healthy. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen with Bogosian. I wonder if he becomes a long-term IR type of player, but maybe he comes back too. And
would never play him if he comes back at this point.
Maybe.
He's what, your ninth defenseman out of those guys?
That's the thing. There are still the same thing that led us all to think Ristolainen was getting traded still exists. It's the bodies. It's the number. It's the sheer volume of players. Remember, they have Casey Nelson in Rochester right now, too. Like, they have 10, 11 defensemen they could confidently put in the lineup and think can hold their own.
But you don't trade them just to trade them because you have bodies. Those bodies aren't better than Ristolainen.
But they're going to have a cap issue. If Bogosian comes back today, they're over the cap. And they have to do something. And maybe they do try to trade Ristolainen. And I keep thinking about Winnipeg, and I'm thinking a little bit more and more about Anaheim, too. There are teams that make sense. There are teams that wanted Justin Falk from Carolina that didn't get him.
But no one's just taking money, though. No one's just taking money. You have to...
Well, those
teams have
space.
Whoever you get back is going to...
No, that's not true. Well,
I don't know. I don't know if anyone's going to be willing just to eat cap.
I think Winnipeg should be willing to. They have, like, $20 million in space.
Mm. I mean, Botcher was talking about it yesterday. Like, it's not easy to just... dump money on teams.
Anaheim should be the team maybe we're thinking more about. They had a trade in place for Justin Falk. Like, they were... We all know they were trying to get a right-shot defenseman. They had a trade in place for him. The problem was the contract extension with him broke down.
So who's Buffalo getting from Anaheim?
Andre Cache. I mentioned him yesterday. He's, like, you know, about as good a young player I think you're going to get for Rasmus Ristolainen. You could get Jack Roslovich from Winnipeg, but I don't even think he's as good as Cache. Like, I think that's a good young... It's a winger, but a right winger. Like, that's the guy that goes in for Sobotka tomorrow.
I would hope.
Like, that second line becomes a lot better if that happens. And that's the thing. It's really about taking value on your blue line that you really don't need anymore because you have Montour, because you have Miller, because you have Joki Haru, because you have Casey Nelson in the minors, because you have Pilot, because you have Scandella playing better even. Joki Haru has saved Marco Scandella, which is amazing.
Had a goal yesterday.
I'm missing someone else. I'm missing Dahlin. Of course, the franchise defenseman on the blue line, who for some reason is only playing 18 minutes a night. But anyways, they have enough on the blue line. Like, they don't really need Ristolainen anymore. They don't. Like, it's fine. Like, he's playing, and he is playing better. Chad said that in the last segment. Like, I think he is playing better. But they don't need him anymore. Take your depth. Take your value. Flip it to where you need it more. And you need it more either on the right wing right now or at center. So, if that trade is still out there, which maybe it's not, because if it was, I think maybe he gets dealt. But I have to imagine that if Anaheim was willing to trade Cache to get Justin Falk, who is older than Ristolainen, who is more expensive than Ristolainen, and yeah, he's better, but he's not, like, significantly better to me. Anaheim should be willing to trade Cache for Ristolainen, and maybe the Sabres want more than him. I think they probably would be in the right to want more than him, but at the end of the day, if they wouldn't give up a lot more, I think I would still do it. Because it's about putting your value and putting your putting the value into a position and kind of balancing your roster more. You know what I mean?
Is this the final year with Bogosian? Like,
yeah.
Is someone – is it possible? I mean, like Okposo making $6 million, and they're still on the hook for a while with that.
Yeah, three more years after this season.
So, geez. Bogosian, does somebody with this cap problem
– that that might
would
be
anybody
it, yeah.
take that on?
I have to imagine somebody would, but it would have to be a team that is, like, right at the floor. I wonder if Winnipeg would take him back.
Hypothetically,
like for almost
yeah.
nothing. Like, maybe, like, for a fifth-round pick.
Hypothetically,
or a sixth-round pick.
Let's say that's the move, and Ristolainen does stay this year. You still have a numbers problem because Montour is going to come back. You talked about Lawrence Pilot.
Right, who comes out of the lineup?
Is it Scandella? I feel like that's probably – I'm not taking anybody else out of the
lineup. He's playing right now.
Yoki Haru, I'm not taking out of the lineup. I hope not.
But my worry would be –
they send him.
That's the easy thing to do. It's easier to take the young guy who's inexpensive and send him down. That's what I agree with.
It's a downgrade.
It's not the right one. So
it doesn't matter what's the easier.
No, you're right. I think the ideal situation would be
Scandella comes out, I think.
Like, if you wanted to make your blue line as good as possible, you don't trade Ristolainen. Like, I think they're about as good with him not here. But Bogosian is not as good as him. Like, that's just a fact.
That's
Bogosian
what I would explore
is not,
first.
To me, they're almost like the same style, though. You know what I mean? Like, they're both big, physical, can skate, have big shots. Like, they have all the physical tools you would want. But when it comes to puck movement and passing and hockey sense, like, that's where they fall short. Ristolainen, though, is a better hockey player than Bogosian. So even though they're in the same style, Ristolainen's better. So I should get more value for him. That's why I would prefer to move him.
Well, yeah,
but
if I can get a top six forward for Ristolainen, that's the first move.
Bogosian should be a guy that I think you are able to move.
You should explore
it,
for sure.
Winnipeg has $8 million in cap space right now, over $8
million. And once Bogosian's hit?
No, I'm sorry, that's Columbus I'm looking at. Winnipeg has $7 million in cap space, and Bogosian's hit is 5.4. So you could also retain salary. You know, you could make that work. I think that... yes. Your question was, is Bogosian tradable? I think with 1 year left on that contract, yes, he is.
I mean, in the past,
he's
of
get
course
healthy,
he wasn't.
Though. He's got to get healthy, and that's never a guarantee because this guy is always hurt.
I'm curious to see where they put Montour when he comes back because
I
think Dahlin and Miller have been playing really well, but Dahlin and Montour, like, that's a pairing you probably want to have as your top. And then, I mean, is Miller and Yoki Haru the third?
If Montour came back tomorrow...
that's a great pairing, I think.
If Montour came back tomorrow...
yeah.
Someone moves to the left. Someone moves to their offside, I think.
I like the idea of Miller and Yoki Haru. Do you split up the Ristolainen
and McCabe
pairing?
That's two righties, but I think they're capable.
Or maybe you make it, you at least have some puck movers on each pairing by moving Ristolainen and McCabe. Maybe pair Ristolainen with Miller Yoki Haru with McCabe.
This is why
I'm sorry, a
trade just seems so likely. Who do you take out? Everyone here would probably tell you Scandella. But like, I'll be honest, Scandella's played well this year. Like, he's played better. He scores last night. Like, he did a good job jumping up there. He's played well. I think he would still be the favorite among fans to take out of the lineup of the guys that are in right now. I'm not confident that's who would be taken out, though. But I don't really know who would be taken out. I worry that it's Yoki Haru. But he's been so good. That pass
and
he makes
like
the middle
Kruger
stat last
him,
night.
Too. It sounds like he has confidence in him.
That pass he makes the middle stat last night was terrific. It's right on the tape. He makes it's almost like a quarterback. It's almost like Aaron Rodgers. He threw middle stat open. He did. Middle stat was not open when he makes that pass, but he sees him coming open
the anticipation
behind the
pass.
Defenseman. Exactly. He's like a quarterback seeing the play before
pausing
it happens.
Keeping the safety in the middle of the ice with his eyes.
I would be
slinging it.
I would be almost, I almost want to say I would be disgusted if they took him out of the lineup. Like, he has been terrific, I think. And he's good, and he's young, and Kruger's giving him credit for not even being like a young player. Like, he almost treats him like a mature veteran at this point because of the way he plays. That guy should not come out of your lineup, but I don't know who. I don't know who does. Unless you trade somebody. And maybe, by the way, we haven't mentioned him, Scandella. You could move him. Same situation as Bogosian. He's only got 1 year left. So the cap hit's not ideal, but it's $4 million. You could probably convince a team to take that on for 1 year. And I think he's played well enough this season to where, and he wasn't good last year, but he wasn't a disaster. And the year before that, I thought he was okay. So I think you could sell a team on Scandella.
Yeah, I'm not into move Ristolainen just for the sake of moving him because they have a body count problem here with how many there are. If I can get a top six, that's the ideal move. If not, I would much rather explore, instead of just giving up Ristolainen for, you know, maybe a third liner and a pick or whatever, I would rather explore, can I get someone to take this final year Bogosian's salary? Can I see if I can get rid of Scandella? Because, again, if you're going to move someone just to move someone to make it easier to figure this defense out, I don't want that to be Ristolainen.
That's the trade, though, that happens, if one does. Right now?
Ristolainen?
I think Ristolainen is still it. I think if somebody, yeah, I think if there's the a trade likely. To be made, it's Ristolainen. Winnipeg should be all over that. Anaheim, I think there's reason to believe, will be all over that. So, to me, you look at it right now, and there's teams out there that want right-shot defensemen, and there's teams that I think will want to explore that, and at some point, I think the Sabres get the value they want. I do appreciate, by the way, that they didn't think they had to make this trade before the season started. That's kind of how it felt for me with O'Reilly. It felt like the O'Reilly trade was rushed. That they just didn't want him a part of the locker room. They wanted to make sure he was gone almost at all costs. And they took a trade that they got almost pennies on the dollar to be able to do it. They did favors to St. Louis in that trade by taking on Berglund salary, by taking on Sobotka salary. You actually look back at that trade, and O'Reilly had a big cap. It was like $7.5 million. The Sabres took on more cap than St. Louis had.
I was going to say, it seems bad now, but I feel like it was that way when it happened, at least from my perspective.
There was reason to be hopeful about it because we didn't know what Tage Thompson was.
I think too many people were okay with that move.
Well, we didn't
just
know,
because they wanted O'Reilly out.
We didn't really know what Tage Thompson was.
Yeah, but
he struggled a lot. If he came out and scored 20 goals for you and is a former first-round pick and he's 6'5 and you can blast the puck 100 miles
an hour.
Were
those the expectations? Like, were those warranted expectations heading in?
We didn't know.
And that's the problem. Like, I'm not trading O'Reilly for that, I don't know. And Sobotka and Berglund. And they got they got some picks, right?
Who? Sabres?
Yeah, with the Blues trade?
Yeah, they got a first-round pick spun for Montour.
Okay, so at least there's that.
Yeah, Montour is nice. I can't wait to see him come back because I think he's their best right-shot defenseman. I do. And that includes Joki Haru and Miller, who have both played really
and
well.
And then you
this
have
and Ristolainen, who, to be fair, like, we're talking about trading Ristolainen right now. He's been good. Like, he's playing too much, no doubt. But he's been better this season.
Nearly
so
scored
far.
The game winner yesterday. Went right off the
Man,
crossbar.
That
he had Bobrovsky beat.
How did they not score?
There
on
were
that
six
shift?
Or seven.
It's so weird too because those
scoring
three players
in like 2 seconds.
Like Reinhardt and Mittelstadt, I can't remember the last time they've ever played together.
Yeah.
Like on a power play, on a line. Like I just don't remember them ever playing together. And they were cycling. Like they were the drop passes were right on the tape. Ristolainen hit the post. Mittelstadt did he? I think he whiffed on that one.
He
time
whiffed.
Away,
he had a good look.
That's one thing with him. I don't really understand why it happens. It almost feels like it's his stick. It almost looks like he's using a junior stick out there. He just doesn't get oomph on the puck. Like it doesn't seem like he gets into the puck.
I actually noticed that even on the power play. He was at the right faceoff circle off a one-timer. And it actually almost scored because I don't think they were expecting the shot to be as low and slow as it was. And he didn't get a lot into it. So that happened actually a couple times yesterday with Mittelstadt.
It's almost like the way he shoots, he either gets all of it or he fans on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember a ton of plays last season where Casey Mittelstadt was fanning on pucks. And, you know, no one really wanted to bring it up because he's a first-round pick and everybody's excited about him. And it's like, oh, he's a rookie. We want him to, you know, get better. And, like, well, he's not going to be perfect right away. But for some reason, that guy was always fanning on it. And I remember during the 10-game win streak, he switched sticks. It was against Pittsburgh, and I think he used a longer stick, and he scored in that game, and it was a great shot. And I thought, all right, like maybe that was it. Maybe it was just his stick. And then he went back to the old one, and kind of the same problems came back around. So I don't know, but there's got to be a fix there because this guy's not going to be able to become a second-line center in the league if he's fanning on 50% of the one-timers that come his way.
Yeah, and you're banking on him to be that right now. Because you don't
at
have
the moment
that.
You are.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
And again, who knows what
I
you
would
could get from Ristolainen
and
if you can get someone from Winnipeg or Anaheim. But right now, heading into the season, that was what they were. And again, it could take maybe 3 or 4 years to. There's been a lot of players that take that long to develop. But right now, they've invested in that for an immediate result.
I will say this, though. It's not. They are banking on him. I don't disagree with you there. But Johansson is holding down the fort for now.
Sure, yes.
And they now have another guy in the organization that could be a second-line center. They didn't have that at all. You didn't even have a guy really you could be hopeful about. Like, Kevin Porter was their Rochester center last year. Now they have Dylan Cousins in the organization. Like, he's not going to play this year, obviously, because he's in juniors. But, like, Paul said this in training camp in preseason. Paul and I agreed with him. I thought Cousins was better than Middlestad in the preseason and in training camp. And it was like, I think if all else was equal, I think he would have been on this team over Middlestad. But, you know, there's status, and he's 18 years old. So there's another guy in the organization now that maybe could develop into a second-line center. So I do like that, but that doesn't mean that they're not still right. They're not banking on Middlestad to become a top
six. And all
guy.
Hope isn't lost. I mean, the first game, I thought with Sheary, he was great. He had two assists. Yesterday, he scored the game winner in the shootout. There still are strong suits you can use. I mean, his hands are great. You saw that in the shootout. So it's not like he's not Alex Nylander. I don't want to put him in.
No, he's like, not. Yeah. No, not at all. That was a whole other thing. Like, just not even close. Nylander could not score in the AHL.
He wasn't even that impressive. We saw him in Mississauga?
Mississauga.
Against Erie. He wasn't even really great there.
We went down to watch McDavid and Erie. We did it a bunch of times, but we went one game to watch against Mississauga because we would try to pick out teams that had either first round picks. No, they had Alex Nylander, they had Michael McLeod, who were both top 10 picks. Or McLeod maybe was just outside the top 10. And I remember just never noticing either one of them. McLeod hasn't even made the NHL, so I'm not surprised there. And I just remember never noticing Nylander. And I had only watched one game, but when the Sabres picked them, I remember thinking about that game. Like, they just picked the guy that I did not notice when I went down to watch him in Erie. Like, so I don't know how that's going to go. And he didn't score in the AHL. Middlestad, you're right, is different. I think if you send him to Rochester today, I think he's that team's number one center, and I think he is scoring.
Yeah.
So it's almost like what Tage Thompson might be right now. He's maybe not good enough to be in the NHL, but he's too good to be in the AHL. So I think that might be where Middlestad is right now. We'll talk a little bit more about him, some trade discussions, some players that we might be looking at. There's one guy from Winnipeg I didn't mention that I want to talk about as an idea, too. Sports Talk Saturday, Joe DiBiase, Lou DiBiase. Give us a call at 803-0550 here on WGR.
Eichel picks it up at center and weaves wide. Now comes in on goal, takes a shot, scored! Well, that didn't take long. Eichel took his time and drifted it home.
Rick Jenneret there on the call. The Sabres beat the Florida Panthers in a shootout last night. Lou just pulled up the NHL standings, and it looks exactly like 2005, 2006.
It's 05-06 all over again. Carolina's 5-0, Buffalo's 4-0-1, Edmonton's 4-0, and Anaheim's 4-1.
There's one thing missing.
Ottawa.
Yes.
And they're the worst team in hockey.
Yeah, right.
They're far and away the worst team in hockey.
That's right.
They're not even close.
So that's one part, but...
By the way, The Ringer did a really good story on Eugene Melnyk the other day. And, like, you know, The Ringer doesn't usually do hockey stuff.
Not normally.
They were kind of responding to, like, Dan Snyder. Like, Dan Snyder gets called the worst owner in sports a lot. Eugene Melnyk is, like, it's a whole nother thing. Like, a whole nother level. Like, there's gambling debts, and there's threatening to move the team, and there's putting the arena, like, away from the city, and there's, asking fans for more money after they've already paid for their tickets. Like, it's just, like, getting rid of all your players that are expensive. Like, it's all... There is not a sports fan base I feel worse for right now, even though I have no love lost for them because of, you know, the rivalry.
I was going to say
Ottawa fans, like, just there's no hope. There's no hope at all. When your owner will not put a dime into that team, has gambling debts.
Do they even have anybody in their system that's like a?
No,
I mean, I can't.
Brady Tkachuk is legit.
Yeah, okay.
But so they don't have like an Eichel. They don't have a Dahlin. Remember, they traded their pick last year to Colorado for Duchene, who they don't have anymore.
They lost
the fourth overall pick by trading it for Duchene.
Woof.
And then he left. They had to trade him. They got like a mid first round pick. 803-0550 is the phone number. A little late to a break, so we'll squeeze one call in here, and then we'll get to the rest of them right after the top of the hour. Let's go to Adam. Adam, you are on Sports Talk Saturday. What's up?
Hey guys, great show.
Thank you.
You guys are talking about Ristolainen and trading him, and that is probably going to happen. And I agree that there's not a lot of room for that many defensemen, but man, I would hate to see him go. I love his game. He's tough. He's physical. If I was on the other team and I knew I was matched up with that guy all night, I would hate it. That would be a hard guy to play against every night or all night long. And I like that he's on our team and that he brings that to a certain other team.
I do get where you're coming from, because I'll say this. Like, this season, Ristolainen is maybe, other than Eichel, Ristolainen is maybe had fans on their feet more than anybody else because he throws big hits all the time. Like, that gets the crowd into it. If I'm,
it's an asset to a certain level, though, not in how they're using him.
I also understand, Adam, your point about, you know, not wanting to play against him because he could take your head off at any moment. But I think I would like playing against him. You always have the puck. Always. And if you're an offensive player, I think you want to play against defensemen like that are always just chipping it out at their own end. You know who I don't want to play against? I don't want to play against Dahlin and Joakim Haru because those guys always have the puck, and I'm going to be chasing them.
I don't
want
the tough guy to be leading my team in defensive minutes.
What's harder to play against, having to worry about a check once in a while or having to chase a guy who has the puck all night?
Chasing, for sure.
That wears you out. That's exhausting. As somebody who's played hockey against teams that are far superior to you, those are the worst games. You know why they're the worst games? Because you never have the puck.
It's demoralizing and you're always when you don't
chasing
have the puck. Yeah.
Right, it's demoralizing, and you're just exhausted by chasing these guys around. So I do get your point, but if I'm a forward on another team, I'd much rather play against Ristolainen than Dahlin.
Agreed.
So 803-0550 is the phone number. If you're hanging on hold, we'll get to you right after the break, right after the update here on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.